Well, big news out of Missouri this morning. The GOP primary for governor has a winner. Lots of other winners and losers last night, too. And the state's U.S. Senate race shapes up as a big barn burner. Here to tell us about all the results last night, Brian Ellison, who is co-host of State House Blend. That's KCUR's political podcast. He anchored our Missouri election coverage last night. And Brian, good morning.
Good to see you, Steve.
Jason Rosenbaum is also joining us. He's a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. He was at Eric Greitens' victory party last night. And Jason, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
Jason, this governor's race was pretty unusual. Four candidates in the hunt up until the very end here. Why did Eric Greitens win this thing and win it as convincingly as he did?
I think that there's a bunch of factors, and they're just sort of assumptions, but I think they're good ones. The first is he was able to raise just a ton of money.
Yeah.
Some of it was from wealthy out-of-state donors. Some of it was just from ordinary Missourians who were drawn to his books, his organization, The Mission Continues, are just the idea of a non-politician running. And I also have to just mention that he also got some indirect help from this 527 called the LG PAC, which attacked other opponents. And I think it's just the messaging just may have been sharper than the other three. You had a person who I think had never been in elected office before. He didn't have a voting record. He obviously wasn't without criticism, as I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute. But I think that his negatives, I think, were a little bit less jarring for Republican voters than the other three. And I think you're right. I don't know if we'll ever see a primary like this anytime again.
Well, Brian Ellison, he ran these ads that got all kinds of people talking of him firing these military assault weapons and blowing stuff up. He doubled down on the primary election campaign's final weekend, running another ad that showed him shooting a gun and smiling and blowing things. Why does that work as a candidate for governor in Missouri?
That's a great question, but I have to ask you, Steve, do you remember what the point of those ads was?
Not really.
You remember that he fired a gun.
That's right.
And I think that makes an important point about today's politics in Missouri, and maybe the rest of the country as well, mirrors the national dialogue. There weren't really significant policy differences between the four candidates.
All.
It was more about the whether the candidate was seen as part of the system, which of course would be bad, or as something from outside, some sort of agent of change, which would be good. In that respect, Eric Greitens bears some strong similarities to another name we've heard a little bit of the last few years now, Donald Trump.
I couldn't agree with you more.
We know Trump is leading the polls in Missouri over Hillary Clinton. That could bode well for Eric Greitens come November.
Yeah. And, you know, Jason, speaking of that point, if Eric Greitens is the Donald Trump campaign candidate in this race for Missouri governor, it strikes me that Chris Koster is sort of the steady Eddie, stay the course somewhat candidate, not unlike Hillary Clinton here. We have national politics, it seems to me anyway, playing out in the state of Missouri.
Perhaps, but I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say that the attorney general is much more conservative than Hillary Clinton is. And I think that that statement I just made is going to play a lot in this upcoming race. I think Koster has made an art form out of diverging from his party on some major issues, whether it be gun rights, whether it be campaign donation limits, or whether it be agriculture. And frankly, I wouldn't be surprised, because Koster has that record, if he gets some endorsements from groups that usually don't endorse Democrats. Now, obviously, Koster used to be a Republican, Eight or seven or eight years ago. But since he has a voting record that is opposed to gun control, and Eric Greitens doesn't, and the NRA typically endorses people with voting records, I would not be shocked if the NRA endorsed Koster over Greitens in the next few weeks. I would not be surprised if the Farm Bureau endorsed Koster for that same reason.
You know, I think that's an excellent point, Stephen. And the reality is that a lot of Republicans, especially those who would identify themselves as moderates, will tell you privately that they would just as soon work with Chris Koster as a more unknown quantity like Eric Greitens. It's entirely possible that Koster has a better chance of having a productive relationship with a Republican-led, Republican-dominated General Assembly.
Are we in agreement here then that Chris Koster begins the general election campaign then, Jason, as the early favorite?
I'm not. I don't like handicapping races, because I'm always wrong, but I would say that he's in a pretty strong position. I mean, he's run statewide a couple of times and won some tough elections.
He's got $11 million in the bank, too.
He already has started spending it. I saw a one-minute ad today on the NBC affiliate in St. Louis touting his record, complete with his beautiful radio voice. So, you know, as I said before, he has a record of being able to do better in outstate Missouri and among Republicans than most of his statewide counterparts. Now, I think a lot of it's going to deal with the national election. And I think that there's also other variables, like the fact that we're going to see an unbelievable amount of money being poured into this contest where ads are going to be all over the place. But I would not underestimate Chris Koster on anything.
I wouldn't underestimate him either. I think Jason's making some important points. But I would also point out this. The total ballots cast yesterday in the governor's race, statewide primary ballots, there are almost twice as many Republican ballots taken around the state as Democratic ballots.
But is that significant given the magnitude of the GOP primary race for governor?
Clearly that's a factor. Clearly there were more competitive races there, higher profile races, even down the ballot. Even so, I think it means Chris Koster has an uphill battle and one that certainly he's preparing for, as Jason said.
Why did Eric Greitens win by, 10 points, basically, here, Jason Rosenbaum? I mean, that's a significant edge that he managed to pull out in a race that was so close to call going into last night that hardly anybody would forecast it.
I think a lot of it has to do with his money edge, and I will just I'm going to tread carefully here because I have a lot of friends in Missouri politics and the media. But frankly, polling in Missouri is very unwieldy.
Yes.
We saw a lot of polls with small sample sizes are utilizing automatic response polling, which is typically less accurate than live polling. And, we saw situations that said it was very, very close. And obviously the outcome showed that it really wasn't that close. I think it was almost a 10-point margin. So I think that just kind of shows that, A, you need to be very careful when you look at some of these polls before Election Day, and B, obviously Greitens had not only a message but an image that attracted a lot of Republican primary voters. Because if you look at the counties that he did well in, he pretty much did well everywhere.
He took first or second in every county in the state.
Is that right?
The only places he didn't win, in fact, were strongholds of one of the other candidates, like Cape Girardeau for Peter Kinder, or the Springfield area went to John Bruner. But other than that, he dominated.
Well, let's go back to this notion that Eric Greitens resembles Donald Trump, because last night we have a cut here from Chris Koster linking Greitens to Donald Trump, criticizing the tone and style of the GOP campaigns this year. Let's listen to Chris Koster talking about his general election opponent, Eric Greitens.
For months, we have watched this unfold. The most disturbing political campaign in the last 50 years. Candidates shooting machine guns and doing sit-ups for the cameras. Candidates mocking the disabled and even questioning the grief of a Gold Star mother.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. Just the intermingling of things that Donald Trump did with things that Eric Greitens did is actually probably a little bit misleading, but perhaps very effective.
But you're going to see probably a lot of that as Donald Trump continues to sort of, at least this week, self-implode on the campaign trail. Democrats are going to work overtime trying to tie Republican candidates to the Donald.
Oh, you know what you are. The Missouri Democratic Party, about seconds after Eric Greitens was called the winner last night, tweeted this out. The GOP just nominated Eric Greitens for Missouri governor, a man lacking the experience, temperament, and conviction to lead Missouri.
Sounds like Donald Trump.
Unfit to lead, that's right.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, let's go to Eric Greitens and a cut from him last night. Here he is talking about Chris Koster as a career politician and saying that Missourians want something altogether different.
Chris Koster and other career politicians have constricted people's sense for what is possible. And what's so fantastic, what you see here tonight, is all of these people around Missouri who are standing up, who want better for themselves and better for their families, and that's what we offer them.
Okay. And there he is giving his perspective of Chris Koster going forward here. I think, Jason, we're going to hear a lot about that in the weeks to come.
Oh, yeah. I could have foreseen a scenario where the other three candidates won and the tenor of the race may have still been pretty negative, but not as negative as it's about to get. I don't think that Koster and Greitens like each other at all. I think that they see each other as threatening to their own political futures. And I think that Greitens, as he showed in some debates, is not afraid not only to defend himself when he's attacked, but to go on the counterattack against his opponents. I don't think he's going to pull any punches against Chris Koster. I don't think Chris Koster is going to pull any punches against Greitens. And I think that kind of buttresses my prediction. And admittingly, I said before that sometimes I'm off on predictions, but I'm pretty safe on saying this. This will probably be one of the most contentious and negative gubernatorial races maybe in the last 20 or 30 years. And I think that there is some evidence from last night and the fact that they're running negative ads. The RGA is, you know, 20 minutes after the primary is over, you know, that's kind of setting the tone right there.
We have one more clip here from Catherine Hanaway. She's one of the also-rans in the GOP gubernatorial primary last night, the one woman in the race. Here he is describing what happened last night and the wave election that perhaps took place last night.
We got overwhelmed by a tidal wave that was called the Outsider Movement. And it was a tidal wave that swept into the presidential nomination, and it swept here into the gubernatorial nomination.
Does that make sense? It was an outsider wave, Brian Ellison?
I think that's fair to say, although there are some exceptions to that rule. I think there are some establishment names that you hear, names like Ashcroft and Carnahan that we can talk about who did not do badly in Missouri politics last night.
Yeah.
But consistent with the national pattern, I think Catherine Hanaway is right. That may not have been the only issue in the campaign, but I think it affected her loss last night.
You know, Jason Rosenbaum, what issues should the gubernatorial candidates be talking about in this election? What do you want to hear them talk about as this race unfolds? Because, hey, Missouri faces some big issues going forward. What do we need to hear about?
I think Missouri needs to hear both candidates articulate a message about how they're going to tackle the very deep racial divisions, not only in St. Louis, but across the state. I think that both candidates, Koster and Greitens, have made appeals to try to show themselves as symbiotic with law enforcement. I think both of them struck a somewhat different tone than their opponents. Even Greitens, I think, had a different mentality than the three other candidates, but was also trying to, you know, project himself as pro-police and criticize, you know, the University of Missouri protesters or the Ferguson protesters. But, I mean, what happened in Ferguson showcased some immense problems, not only with law enforcement, but with poverty, with education, and with economic opportunity throughout the whole state. And while the governor alone can't fix all of that, they can certainly set the tone. And I think that both of those candidates, I mean, for the sake of the St. Louis region and the state, need to take that pretty seriously. And I don't know. I wish I was optimistic and said that that was possible, but we've seen gubernatorial candidates talk about that, but not in a tone that maybe some people who protested in Ferguson or the University of Missouri, Columbia,
right,
basically wanted.
Brian, what do you want to hear?
Well, I think the other issue, I totally agree with Jason about the need to address race relations in the state, but I think also financial issues are really and truly going to come into the light as a major issue in the next term of this General Assembly.
There are people already talking about there's budget shortfalls in the state, and it's going to cost, you know, the human services category of the state budget is going to be cut dramatically here.
We hear about this in Kansas, here in Kansas City. We hear about the Kansas budget issues all the time, and I think it crowds out news about the realities of the Missouri financial situation. Education funding has been cut and challenged, higher education funding, and, of course, transportation and infrastructure needs. You'll hear legislators talk about this a lot, and the deferred expenses and the real need to address the highway system. That's going to become a major issue for the next governor, whoever it is.
Then there's the issue we've talked about on this show any number of times, and that's the rebuilding of Interstate 70 across Missouri that is high on a lot of DOT lists right now. It needs to be widened and expanded, and lots of sort of modern day amenities added to that interstate, and we're talking billions of dollars
right
there. I'm not sure I'm hearing candidates really address that issue yet.
No, but it's going to be point number one on the agenda.
Okay. Any other surprises last night, Jason, when it comes to the governor's race?
When it comes to the governor's race, no, because I could have seen all four candidates winning. So I wasn't that surprised Greitens pulled it off. I was surprised with some of the other statewide races as far as the margins. Like, I did not expect Josh Hawley to win in a blowout against Kurt Schaefer. I expect
that's the race for attorney general you're attorney talking general. About.
You know, I thought that race was going to be a lot closer. I wasn't surprised Teresa Hensley beat Jake Zimmerman because she had some pretty big name support and she's a well-known entity in Kansas City. But I think she won by a pretty decisive margin. So I was, again, kind of surprised by that margin. I was not as surprised like Jay Ashcroft winning or Russ Carnahan winning their races because the Carnahan and Ashcroft names really ring pretty heavily in their respective primaries. And they'll both be formidable contenders, not only because of their names, but because they've been tested in tough elections before.
Now, let's go back to that attorney general primary on the Republican side, Brian. Josh Hawley, Kurt Schaefer, the most vicious primary race of the cycle, at least most pundits seem to agree. Why did Josh Hawley win so convincingly, and how do you sort of what do you make of the Josh Hawley race against Teresa Hensley in the general election going forward?
I think that's a question, Steve, that a lot of folks are going to be asking in the days ahead. Here was a race again characterized not by a huge difference in terms of policy or how the two candidates would fulfill the office.
Two pretty conservative guys,
both very conservative. Kurt Schaefer probably had a bit more of a conservative record to run on in the Missouri Senate, but some would say he didn't have a lot of friends there by the time he was done. But like Jason, I was surprised by the margin, 64% to 36%. That was nothing less than a blowout. Josh Hawley, not a highly known entity really around the state, and I think a lot will depend on how he makes himself known, what he turns his identity into. Teresa Hensley, of course, known in the western part of the state, especially among Democrats, but we'll see if she can draw on support from the St. Louis area to push her across the line. I think you'll see a pretty clear liberal-conservative distinction in this race. Josh Hawley will talk about joining with other state attorney generals and the kinds of challenges to the federal government that have not happened here in Missouri with Chris Koster in that office. Teresa Hensley, I think, will talk about sustaining the work that Koster has done, defending the rights of consumers, and probably somewhat more traditional roles for an attorney general.
Teresa Hensley from the Cass County area, just south of Kansas City. You know, Jason, she had lost a couple of previous races, one for Congress and one for re-election as prosecutor down in Cass County. This was sort of her last go-around. I should point out that this would be a history-making election mm-hmm. if she wins. I don't believe we've ever had a female attorney general before, so some small history that would be made here.
Yes, and that would be a first, just as if Robin Smith, the Secretary of State nominee for the Democrats, wins, she will be the first African-American ever to hold statewide office. She is the first African-American woman to get a nomination. Ellen Wheat was obviously the first African-American to get a statewide nomination. And, you know, I interviewed Teresa Hensley on our podcast. She has a pretty lengthy record of being a prosecutor, and
right.
I think that she's going to stress that. But I think that one thing that I had to question her about was in 2012, which was a good Democratic year, she got blown out by Vicky Hartzler in admittingly a Republican-leaning district.
Yeah.
But you saw in 2008, when it was also a good Democratic year, Judy Baker, who's now the treasurer nominee, almost win a Republican seat. And I think that that was kind of a question that she needed to answer about whether she can be viable statewide if she can't even compete very strongly on that level. Obviously, she answered it pretty well because Jake Zimmerman, the Democrat she defeated, I think raised more money and spent more money than her. And I think that since that contest was not nearly as nasty as the Republican one, I don't think she's going to have much of a problem getting the party united behind her. And it's going to be, I think, a very similar contest to 2008 when Chris Koster basically talked about his prosecutorial experience compared to Mike Gibbons, who didn't really have it. Josh Hawley, I think, doesn't have a voting record, so it's harder for Democrats to exploit that. But I wouldn't say he has a huge amount of, like, in courtroom experience,
right.
which was kind of the knock on him
right.
in the primary. I think that's going to get exploited a lot by Democrats.
And just a quick note here, Claire McCaskill, the U.S. Senator from Missouri, a big fan of Teresa Hensley's
yes.
Going forward here. You know, Brian Ellison, the fact that she's a woman, the fact that we have a candidate for an African-American candidate going forward, does that matter in Missouri statewide politics? Are those going to be issues going forward or not?
Well, I think it matters. I think in some constituencies it's probably a help, and in others it may not be. I think a lot of folks are paying some attention to the lieutenant governor Republican primary race, where the local Kansas City candidate, Bev Randles, was defeated in that 52% to 42%, I think, would have been a historic nomination as an African-American woman being nominated by the Republicans for governor. She had strong conservative credentials, supported by the Club for Growth, supported by Rex Sinkfield.
A lot of money from Rex Sinkfield.
Went down to a pretty sound defeat. So, yes, I think that is potentially helpful with a certain group of voters, but perhaps not enough to carry the day in Missouri.
We have a question here from Gabby, who's written us at KCUR up to date. Every 4 years, Jacob Turk runs against Congressman Emanuel Cleaver in Missouri's 5th congressional district, and he loses. Why does he keep running?
Wow, that's a question for the ages.
Yeah, yeah, I'll defer to Jason on that too.
I don't know because
I'm sure anybody knows.
But I mean that district is Cleaver's until he retires. But Steve, you and I were both at the Democratic National Convention. Cleaver is a force of nature in Kansas City politics, and I think unseating him, especially in a district that Democratic, is basically impossible.
Unseating him in a presidential election year when the turnout is high is particularly difficult. Mm-hmm. He's come within, 8 or 10 points in off-year elections, and maybe that's what Jacob Turk's continuing to hope for here.
There's an old-school belief in some quarters that there always should be a candidate on the ballot, and Jacob Turk has taken it upon himself to be that candidate, to spend the money and the energy required to be that candidate. For that, I will say, in as bipartisan a way as possible, he is to be commended.
And yes. Also, just maybe a couple final notes here. On the Democratic side, Russ Carnahan, as we've mentioned, attempting a political comeback of sorts. He took a step in that direction last night with a win in the Democratic primary for lieutenant governor. He's the last of the Carnahans, Jason, still showing some interest in politics. How do you see his chances against Republican Mike Parson in this race?
Well, I think that they're stronger than people may think. I think people may look at his 2012 loss against Lacey Clay and say, oh, you know, he doesn't have it anymore politically, or, you know, he's kind of washed up or whatever. But you have to keep in mind that that was a situation where he was drawn into a district where his chances of winning were very, very low. And while I don't think Russ Carnahan is universally beloved within the Democratic Party, he does have the experience of watching his father win and occasionally lose statewide elections. Right. And that is knowledge that is very, very valuable for yourself when you go through this situation. That primary he had with Tommy Pearson and Winston Apple was very low profile. There was very little negativity in it. He's not going to have a problem getting the Democratic Party behind him. But I just got to say, Mike Parson, who's the Republican nominee, is going to be a really tough competitor. He's well known and well liked in Southwest Missouri, and he's going to be able to, just as Russ Carnahan will point to things in Parson's record, Russ Carnahan has a record in Congress.
Yeah. We'll have to leave our conversation there. Interesting stuff out of Missouri. Brian Ellison, co-host of State House Blend here at KCUR. Jason Rosenbaum, a reporter for St. Louis Public Radio. I was with him out in Philadelphia just last week at the Democratic National Convention. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your great expertise. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Well, it was a big night in Kansas, too, as voters made picks for the state legislature. These are decisions that determine whether the legislature remains firmly in Governor Sam Brownback's hands or if voters are beginning to move away from the governor. In a rarity, Congressman Tim Huell's camp lost a razor-close election to challenger Roger Marshall out in western Kansas. Incumbents rarely lose in congressional primaries in Kansas. To give us an update on this side of the state line, our Amy Jeffries, she's the Kansas elections editor for KCUR. Amy, how are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Yeah,
it was late night.
Everyone's a little tired. Sam Zeff's also here. He's KCUR's education reporter and co-host of State House Blend. Sam, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
A mini revolution last night. Amy, what happened in Kansas?
Well, you know, that is a very good question. It's interesting. Literally, just as you were making your introduction here, the governor's statement came across my email. So I'm just going to share that with you now because I think it provides some interesting framing for what we saw happen last night. This is a quote statement from Governor Sam Brownback's office. Quote, Kansas is not immune from the widespread anti-incumbency sentiment we have seen across the nation this election season. Governor Brownback looks forward to working with strong Republican majorities in the legislature to make Kansas the best place in America to raise a family and grow a business.
Is that an acknowledgement that the other side won a whole bunch of races last night, Amy, or not?
There were a lot of races that changed hands. In the Kansas Senate alone, there were 16 Republican primaries. Moderates won 8 of those, knocking off 6 incumbents and picking up 2 seats that had been left open by conservative retirements.
Extraordinary to see that kind of turnaround.
It is. I mean, I think that with as many primary challengers as there were, and as hard as some of them seem to be campaigning, we expected some turnover. But the question was really how much, and the answer that we got last night was a lot.
And maybe the next question is why? What's going on out in Kansas that caused this little revolution to take place?
Well, I think, you know, the governor may be right. There's definitely some anti-incumbent sentiment out there. Of course, he may be the incumbent that the anti is against.
Yes.
Just to put it a fine point on it, of course, we got a lot of postcards in the mail during the campaign season in the run-up to these primaries. And the guys whose supporters sent postcards depicting Brownback as a mad scientist, John Scooball and Jan Kessinger, in Johnson County or two of those, they won their races. Whereas the guy whose supporters sent postcards likening his Republican primary opponent to Bernie Sanders, well, he lost. And that was incumbent Senator Forrest Knox, who lost to Bruce Givens in southeast Kansas. So, you know, this definitely seems to be a throw the bums out, toss the incumbents movement that's going on.
Sam, I want to get your take on this. I also want to ask our listeners if you want to chime in here on what you think happened in Kansas last night. What were voters saying to Governor Brownback? What were voters saying to legislative leaders? 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Sam Zeff, what were they saying?
Well, I think it's too early to suggest that this is an total anti-incumbency thing. I think that is Governor Brownback and the party putting the best face on the shellacking that they took last night. Clearly, I think that the governor's poor approval rating, he's somewhere below 20%.
Which you never see.
You very rarely see that.
Rarity in American politics.
And I think that weighed heavily on all of these conservative shoulders. There were two, moderate senators, Republican senators who had primaries last night. They held serve. So those incumbents, they were not, there was not an anti-incumbency thing with them. I think turnout, especially in Johnson County, played a big role. Went back and I looked at some of the numbers for the two Senate races in Johnson County. Melcher and Scooble, Jeff Melcher being the incumbent conservative, and Dinah Sykes and Greg Smith, Smith being the conservative incumbent. So turnout, when you go back to the primaries that Melcher and Smith had in 2012, turnout in those two races 9% higher this year than their primary races back in 2012. So clearly, the moderates in Johnson County, and I think we saw this in the early voting, where both of them really took a pasting in the early voting, which was the results we got early. I think they were out hustled, and I think they were out organized. Having said that, I went back and I did the same analysis for a couple of outstate races. Forrest Knox down in south central Kansas, who lost last night to Bruce Givens, and also out in Garden City, where Larry Powell lost to John Dahl. When I went back and looked at those primary races from 2012, actually there was a little bit, the turnout then was a little higher. So clearly there were, I think, different pressures in different parts of the state, perhaps more local issues when you got out state. But they all came together to, I think, radically change what the Kansas legislature is going to look like come 2017.
You know, it strikes me, Amy, that the task before voters this during a primary campaign is not easy. They have to separate out candidates from the same party and figure out which one is the conservative, which one is more moderate, and then which one sort of fits their own worldview of where the state needs to be going. And then they're getting all these postcards that muck up the works a little bit. That's not easy for voters.
No, not at all. And I think one of the things that's interesting to look at as we figure out what exactly has transpired here is that just last fall, when the Docking Institute did their statewide survey, more than half of the people who responded to that survey could not name their state senator or their state representative. So there was a lot of homework to do here if what you're expecting is to be able to distinguish between two candidates. And so what we kind of have yet to discern is whether, again, this is about throw the bums out and toss out these incumbents who were linked to round back on postcards, or whether, you know, Kansans have really schooled up and learned who their state legislators are and what they stand for, and what that will mean sort of going forward in terms of policy in the state legislature.
Yeah, Sam?
I also want to point out that there are a lot of Democrats who are waiting to get out there and start hitting the campaign trail. A race that I'm going to be watching.
They see opportunities here, you're saying.
Yes. I don't think that we're done changing the complexion of either the state House or the state Senate. Race that I'm going to be watching closely is Senator Steve Fitzgerald, conservative Republican.
Up in Leavenworth.
Mm-hmm. He's got a very credible Democratic candidate who came out of the primary last night, Bill Hutton, lawyer, municipal court judge.
Fitzgerald is a big social conservative on some of these social issues that really didn't seem to play at all last night.
Mm-hmm. So I think that as we looked forward to November, I think that we could see more Democrats, a few more anyway, heading to Topeka come the session in 2017.
Well, so maybe the million-dollar question here, literally the million-dollar question is, so what does this mean for policy going forward in the state of Kansas? Sam, you cover the schools, and schools have been under threat for a while now. What does this mean for school funding? You know, what does it mean for the state budget? What does it mean for the potential for tax increases now in response to the big 2012 tax cuts that Governor Brownback put in place? Are you expecting whirlwind change here?
I think first of all, they have to write a new school funding formula come 2017. The block grant expires at the end of this fiscal year.
They're overdue on that task, it seems to me.
Right. They gave themselves 2 years to write a school funding formula, and just like your kids in homework, of course, they're going to take that right up to the deadline.
Yeah.
So I think that if you put some more moderates and some more Democrats in there, I think you're going to get a school funding formula that is going to look an awful lot like the old school funding formula. Conservatives have been demanding an outcome-based formula. That is, the better your students do in the district, the more money that you get. Moderates and Democrats believe that, you know, you whatever it costs to school a student, that's what you do. So I think that you'll probably have a school funding formula, if this pattern continues, that I think educators are going to be a little bit more at ease with. All these moderates have suggested that they want to close the LLC loophole. Now that doesn't get you all the money back. There are a lot of moderates, certainly Democrats, who want to raise the income tax rate back to the old rate of 6.5%. Mm-hmm. That's going to be very contentious. We're going to have to see where the governor falls on that.
So you actually have lawmakers or candidates for the legislature saying they want to raise the income tax back to where it was before?
Right. I mean, there is...
Which is always a tough sell politically.
It is, but I think as we've seen, Kansans are ready to at least go back a little bit, if not a lot, because they see that the just a couple of days ago, they missed their revenue estimate in July by $13 million.
Again.
Which, by the way, is better than they've had in a lot of Julys, but it's still they're off by $13 million in the first month of the current fiscal year.
Amy, as you look around the state, are you seeing legislative candidates saying, yeah, it's time to raise taxes again? Are they upfront about that? that prospect?
Of course, they're not going to phrase it exactly that way.
as bluntly as your host just did.
That's not going to be their headline.
Yeah.
But I also think that Sam is right. It's also with the constituency. When I was out in western Kansas in the Garden City area in June, I mean, it was hard to find someone, even small business owners who were benefiting from the LLC exemption, who didn't want it to be adjusted. You know, there was
even people receiving it who were saying,
"That's right." I mean,
it's okay to adjust.
There was one guy who's involved in biofuels in ethanol, and he had actually used the LLC exemption for its stated purpose of hiring more people and putting it back into his business, and he still thought that it should have more restrictions to it. Huh. So, you know, these are Republicans, these are fiscal conservatives who are saying, you know, this formula, this tax balance is not working well, and so there's some rejiggering to do, and that's the message going to the legislature.
Sam.
Two things here. Now, I haven't asked him about this, but I would like to think that even Bill Self would want to pay a little Kansas income tax.
You're referring to your story that showed that even Bill Self is taking advantage and has for a number of years of this loophole in the tax law.
Right. He's had this LLC going back to his days at the University of Illinois. But at my beloved University of Kansas, I'd like to think that people want to pay some state income tax. Second, I want to put this on your radar. It's not just fiscal policy and education we're talking about. I think we're going to see guns come up in this new legislature. Mm-hmm. A lot of these moderates would really like to roll back the campus conceal and carry. That's going to be law a year from now if nothing is done. This is where, without a permit, anybody can carry a weapon, a gun, onto any public university campus, and in fact, any public building. And I think there's going to be discussions early on about rolling that back. The polling in Kansas overwhelmingly shows that people don't want conceal and carry on college campuses.
You know, guns, the new social issue du jour this year, like abortion was once upon a time.
Boy, you know, it's always been an issue. But I think this conceal and carry on campus may have been a bridge too far. Forrest Knox lost his primary last night. He was one of the driving forces of expanding gun rights in Kansas. So we've got education, we've got fiscal matters, and I think we're also going to see guns.
We're talking about the Kansas elections last night and what in the world happened across the state. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Karen from Olathe. Karen, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to kind of reiterate what one of your guests was saying, to kind of question Brownback's idea that this was a national movement. I think all politics is local, and, you know, Kansas might not have mountains, we might not have beaches, but we are a great place to raise your family. And once you start messing with the way that your family is raised and the way that your schools are funded, then I think you can get a lot of people doing a lot of politics. So I'm pretty excited for what happened last night.
So you're happy with the results, Karen. How come?
Well, I'm actually a Democrat, so I didn't get to vote in the races that you guys are talking about. I had different races. But I think that the fact that our schools are not being funded so well, what's going to happen to our roads within the next 10 years as we're not doing the things now to keep them maintained. We've always had great roads. We've always had great schools. And I think it's really frustrating that those really basic things that we can't take care of ourselves. I can't go out and build an awesome road. I have to rely on government to do it.
Right.
And I don't mind paying the taxes to do it.
Right. Karen, I'm glad you called. And you know, Amy, great example there of someone who clearly is paying attention. A lot of Kansans appear to be doing exactly that right now.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, some of them may have not even wanted to pay attention. But when these issues, education, certainly a big one, people start to notice when their school nurse isn't there anymore. When there's a couple of kids more in their kids' classroom and they're getting less attention, people start to notice that stuff. And I think that is part of what is evidenced here.
We have just a few minutes left. I would be remiss if we didn't turn at least for a few minutes to what in the world happened to Tim Huell's camp. He was the incumbent Republican congressman from western Kansas, suffered an extremely rare defeat last night in a GOP primary in one of the most Republican districts in the state. It's the district that gave birth to Jerry Moran, Pat Roberts, Bob Dole over the years. It's maybe the most solidly Republican, reliably Republican congressional district in the state. Sam, what happened at Tim Huell's camp?
Well, you know, I just want to point out that Patrick Miller, who was on the radio with us last night, political science
KU.
Professor
yeah.
from KU, suggested that if the first district of Kansas, which is about the size of Georgia, if it was its own state, only Utah would have been more for Romney than the first congressional district of Kansas.
Wow.
So is it red? Boy, it's a shade of red that, you know, I can't even begin to, like, it's the face of the sun.
Yeah.
So last night, when Huell's camp got kicked off the Ag Committee, people have said, you can do almost anything, but you got to protect our agriculture interests. There has been somebody on the House Agriculture Committee from the first district of Kansas since they were plowing the ground with mules. And because he was in a spat, Huell's camp was in a spat with former Speaker of the House John Boehner.
Mm-hmm.
Boehner kicked him off, and that is, as people in the first congressional district said, an unforgivable sin.
Mm.
Roger Marshall comes in, pledges he's going to, he's going to get himself back on that agriculture committee, and the big farming interests out there, Farm Bureau, pretty conservative group. Cattle people rallied behind him, and it was a huge, huge win for Roger Marshall.
Yeah, and Tim Huell's camp, it's only accurate to point out that it was extremely unpopular with a lot of Republicans in Washington, D.C., who weren't eager to come to his rescue because a lot of folks knew he was in trouble.
Yeah, nobody. He didn't have a lot of friends. He rode the wave in on the Tea Party. He was in that Freedom Caucus, which was at odds with leadership from time to time. So he didn't have a lot of friends, and the friends he had, he didn't get to the poll yesterday.
We just have a few seconds left, Amy. The other congressional races around Kansas, the U.S. Senate race. You see anything happening there? Any upsets in the offing, or is it going to be a status quo going forward?
I think the upsets would be upsets indeed. I mean, they would be surprises. Of course, we've had some surprises already this election season. We haven't been paying all that much attention, honestly, to these other congressional races because the Kansas legislative races have been so contentious and so interesting. Interesting to note, too, that the Democrat who won and will be challenging Kevin Yoder in the fall in the 3rd District here in the Johnson County area, he is trying to tie Yoder to Sam Brownback. So he's trying the same strategy that some of the moderates who won legislative seats or legislative nominations anyway last night succeeded with.
Well, I want to thank both of you for taking the time to come in and visit with us here a little bit. Amy Jeffries, our Kansas political editor. Sam Zeff, who covers education for KCUR. Interesting stuff in the Sunflower State, folks. Thanks very much.
Our pleasure.
Thanks.